autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Most are afraid of unknown depths, skirting shores thinking world flat. I'm with the Island Girls in celebration of new religion. Nobody led me or said this way. I sailed alone on makeshift raft with wind as companion. Fate for deliverance, confidence enough to assess new disposition. Seekers of lost paradise may seem fools to those who never sought the other worlds. Welcome to Momentary Zen with Zen Garcia. Visit www.fallenangels.tv. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
As little as long ago or as far away as forever, this is where we meet to celebrate what never was as it comes to pass. Welcome, friends. I'm your host, Zen Garcia. This is Momentary Zen here on Revolution Radio. And it's always a great honor, pleasure to be here with you for fellowship, discourse, and discussion as we introspect into all things esoteric. I'm especially honored to be joined again by my good friend and author, Brett Thomas. Brett, are you there, brother?
I am there, sir. And it's me, the one who is honored to talk to you.
Yeah, it's both of us, brother. It's okay. Relative. But yes, and we, again, thank all of you for taking the time to join us in live broadcast. Brett is the author of the Mystery Babylon website and series, and has been working diligently on some updates, and has his books and information also available on sacredwordpublishing.com, our home site. And so, and Brett will also be one of the presenters at our next conference coming up here in May, which I know it's seems like a long way right now, but it'll be here before you even know it. And so I do hope that those of you that are listening, if some of the insanity with what's going on in the world declines and comes to some semblance of normality, I'm hoping that we can gather together in Union here in Atlanta, Dunwoody, Georgia. And there's been a request for us to do another Georgia Guidestones venture to kick off the conference. And so that might be something that we do again. We did want to include and make happen a time for baptisms where we could go to some running water lake, and I mean not lake but river, and be able to, you know, join together for that kind of an experience. There's been several requests for that as well, and so we'll see, you know, what we can do in the time that we have. But you know, a lot of people interested in both scenarios, so we'll see what happens. But how have you been, brother? And if you would, can you give out your website contact information and anything that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Okay, yeah, I've been good. I've been good, working hard, and now I'm working on the third volume here. So I hope to get at least the first part done by the conference. And I'm had a great time last time. I'm looking forward to it again this year. I think it'll be a lot of fun, just like it was last time. And I did like the Georgia Guidestones too. That was great. If you have any questions, anybody out there who might about the material that we talk about tonight, you could email me mysterybabylon@1791.com. That's my website, mysterybabylon, all one word, at 1791.com. I welcome any questions and I enjoy them. The website, it's mysterybabylon.com quite simply, but it's under construction right now. I hope to have a nice website out by the end of the year, a nice revised one. But you can get started by mystery-babylon.org. It's my old website, but you know what? It's a good starting point if people are curious about the material we talk about.
Yeah, and it's you know, something that you've been writing and releasing for a very long time, and we've been doing a number of broadcasts coming to the listening audience and once a month, every other month thereabouts, and sharing and, you know, talking about the content of your book and of your books. And what is amazing is that we've been led to similar discernment, and we've now, you know, become confirming witness for one another in the material that we've written and shared with the world. And there's a lot of people that are onboarding this truth and sharing these revelations. And my good friend Noel Hadley is also writing about these topics and has a book that just released, The Angel That Beguiled Eve, or something of that nature. But people can find that also at sacredwordpublishing.com. I'll be doing an interview soon with him on these topics. But I think a lot of people, you know, when you begin to examine the extra biblical material, not saying that that's necessary, but certainly it helps to expound upon what I believe is hidden in plain sight there within the canonical materials, and the whole theme of, you know, how is it that Eve eating an apple led to the birth of Cain, and how weirdly inclined he was towards evil, and how did all of this just come about from nothingness? It doesn't make sense until you interpret the story as the beguilement being, you know, sexually wholly seduced, which is exactly what the Greek has for the word expatio, which is the word in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 that Paul uses to describe the serpent beguiling Eve. But, you know, when you come to understand the fullness of this story, it seems to be a skeleton key for unlocking much that has been veiled within scripture and yet remains mysterious and as far as the mainstream churches and the seminaries, things of that nature, Sunday schools, you know, they all still teach that Eve ate an apple and that this apple was the reason for the fall of humanity, our banishment from paradise and our exclusion from heaven, which, you know, that had to be a very powerful piece of fruit for it to do all that, and why God would allow them, you know, just eating this simple piece of fruit for all of that to then be brought upon them, it doesn't make sense. But then when you tie the punishments together with an act that led to Eve being impregnated with Cain, who's said in scripture to be the child of the wicked one, well, then things become increasingly clear, especially the punishments, you know, that there's going to be enmity between her seed and thy seed, speaking to Satan, and that she, Eve, because of her temptation, she would be bearing children in sorrow. And Adam would have to work the ground to bring forth sustenance to feed what would be his future progeny. And so these things, you know, instantly come together like a puzzle of truth when you understand the fruit that Eve ate from the supposed apple to be a sexual encounter with Satan, the devil, the adversary, the serpent in the garden, Samael, the angel of death, the viper of God, which, you know, again, is why we see in this day and age an ongoing struggle with the children of Cain who sit on the thrones of the world. And so, a lot I know to be said in that short time, but both you and I and many others now have been led to similar discernment. And so I'll turn that over to you, Brett, and you can respond, and then we can pick up where we had left in the Mystery Babylon series.
Okay, yeah, you said a lot there, Yasin.
Yeah.
Good job. Yeah, I one thing I want to expose upon, I think you hit it on the nail where you said, you know, you and I didn't know each other all these years. I mean, we live in different states, but it's just kind of amazing that we both decided to do research and actually go a little bit beyond what we've always been taught in Sunday school and in church. And that's where we come up with pretty much the same end result. And that's kind of amazing. I think it's just fascinating that we find these same results and these same thoughts and these same concepts by just doing a little bit of independent thinking, and just doing a little bit of our own critical thinking rather than just what we've been taught or what is tradition. So totally agree with you on that. And as far as the Bible actually supporting in this whole concept of sexual act that actually happened rather than, and probably in addition to the eating of the fruit. We remember that verse that talks about Eve being a virgin, and now because of her conversation with the serpent, she no longer is. Remember that verse? I'm not quite sure. It's in the New Testament, but it's an interesting verse that defiled my virginity. Remember that verse?
Yeah. Are you talking about the 2 Corinthians? Chapter 11, verses 2 and 3, that, you know, she was not a chaste virgin, and yeah, that yes, the serpent beguiled her. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's It's interesting why they would use those particular words rather than right. just saying, you know, it was just she disobeyed. And I just think there's a lot more to it as well. I don't think there's anything really wrong with looking at extra biblical sources. And I espouse the total perfection and the word of God as it sets as being the Bible. But I believe, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with using your own gifts of discernment to look a little further to see, because God will give you those insights and inspirations to decide and to help you discern what is right and what is little off or not wrong with these other extra biblical sources. So I think they're all, well, not all, but a lot are great tools to at least help us maybe to find out and discover a few of these puzzling thoughts that we have in the Bible. Of course, where did Cain get his wife, etc. Those thoughts. We get some answers and we get some realizations from looking around. Don't you agree on that one, Zen?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I think it's important that people read this extra biblical material, especially while it is available to us. And I think that one of the reasons that the Most High did preserve these ancient sources for the modern age is so that we would then, in reading and studying them, be led to discernment to where we could really make sense of what has been hidden within Scripture for so very long.
Right. And, you know, there shouldn't be any reason why we can't look at these and make up our own mind. I mean, we don't really need to have books such as the Book of Enoch being taken away or attempted to be hidden away somewhere. I mean, there's nothing wrong with us making our own minds and taking a look at mm-hmm. the material and asking God to give us the discernment to figure some things out.
Yes. You know, again, I think that's why the Most High said that in the last days he would pour his spirit out upon all flesh, and that the men would dream and receive vision, and same as the young maidens, that discernment would come to the conscience of humanity as a whole, and that we Right. would be able to make sense of what occurred in the past so that we could then make sense of what is coming down the line in the future. And, you know, again, so critical that people are able to understand and interpret what happened in our ancient past, because, you know, the Scriptures also tell us that you know, it's the end that is revealed from the beginning.
From the beginning, right.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree on that one. And I think obviously the ones that are against this and trying to silence our ability to actually look deeper here are have some negative reasons for that. I mean, you know, we've always read that there will be enmity since the very beginning, as you said. I mean, how can it just be, if they talk about actual seeds here, the seed of Adam and the seed of the serpent, that's pretty clear when we hear about that. And of course, we can try to, you know, some can try to rush the rationalization and say, you know, it's just figuratively, but what if it's more? You know, I think there are people out there that are just hell-bent on not having this information out there, and because it exposes them, it exposes their plots, and once you find the origins and the sources, then you're enlightened and you're understanding what's going on in their mind and why they are pushing a particular thing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, again, that's one of the reasons why we, as a family, my children and myself, we've written and interpreted and translated so many ancient sources, and compiling them, have made them available in book form for others to be able to study and to consider. Mm-hmm. And so those of you that, you know, are interested and want to look at and examine some of this ancient material, just go to sacredwordpublishing.com and you'll find a lot of ancient sources. And, you know, read them, study them, consider them, because I think they're important for helping us to really make sense of the scriptures in the manner that God wanted us, in my opinion, to be able to read and understand them.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. Shall we continue?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, just FYI, actually, I'm on page 195 of my first volume, part one, and we have been talking about Cain, and we just got off his birth last time, and the little tricky things that have been done to kind of twist the reality there and twist our perceptions of that whole concept in the Bible and in other sources. So, that was our last meeting and get together. So now we're going to kind of get into a little bit of more of how Cain reacted just after the murder. And again, the reason I started looking up and researching under the title of Mystery Babylon is because in Revelation 17:5, the Bible gives us a concept of what this end times force, if you call it, with many, many systems around that it, the many tentacles that it uses, and it calls it Mystery Babylon, Rise Babylon. And this whole force basically is very, very simple. And I don't usually go into the meanings and the reasons why I named the book Mystery Babylon, but of course it's a mystery. And as then said, God let us to have mysteries to be deciphered in the end times. So obviously that's a pretty simple part of the definition. But we look at the other side, Babylon, and Babylon, of course, was a city long, long ago, very corrupt and very, very immoral, and it was the epitome of all that God hated and thought was worldly. Obviously, the city does not, I mean, it's been rebuilt a little bit in the past few years, but it hasn't existed for many, many thousands of years. And it has virtually survived somehow. So that's what I do in these volumes. I take it through its original inception, of course, what I've found and researched that actually Cain and the giants were the people that actually helped to build Babylon in the first place. So it makes total sense to actually go through and study Cain, because what I do in these books as well is make a comparison of these times in the days of Noah and before to today, because Jesus said that himself. The end times will be almost parallel to the way things way people acted and the way things went on back in the end and the early times of Noah. And it would be the same, and you'd see a lot of similarities today. So that's why we look at Cain, and we look at this whole concept of early Genesis, is because we can see a lot of signs and parallels and things to help us understand and fuel our way to decipher what is truly and might be from God or what might be actually truly from the world. Because Satan is an imitator, and he will do his best to actually try to make things look like Christ, but just a little different, you know, just with a little bit of humanism in there someplace, or just with a little bit of paganism in there someplace, but it's close, you know. And so a lot of churches nowadays have been sanitized, and they have tried to adopt some of these things of the world and tried to make it all work and mix in, but that's not what God wants. God does not want this compromised faith, this compromised belief. So long-winded there, but just that's basically one of the reasons why I started getting into this whole concept, this whole parallel concept of then to now. Because the more that I researched over the years, the more parallels that I've seen, and I just thought I'd decide to write them down. So yeah. With that said and done, I think that's a great reason to continue on with understanding Cain, because whether he has literal seed, which I believe, still today somewhere in some people. I believe there's also a theological seed or theological ways of thinking and doing things and worldviews that he has and started having and has passed on to all of us. We don't accept them. Not all of us actually believe them, but all of us can actually see these things going on and understand in the world around us. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. So as we return, we come back to where we were last time, and Cain had just murdered Abel, and God confronted him, and we were talking about how God said, you know, the door to your heart, you have to watch that because the evil one is waiting, and Cain's just sloughing that off, and he doesn't really believe it. He doesn't really believe God in the first place, which is amazing. If any one of us today actually saw God or heard him coming and talking to us, I mean, we would be probably very astonished and frightened and on our knees. But Cain, he knew the whole story. He knew that God was around and he knew of God, but he really didn't fear God or didn't really care. And right. That's the fascinating thing. It's just he was just so full of pride that he just didn't even want to have anything to do with what God was saying, because he adopted a lot of his father's thoughts, and these thoughts, as we know, the serpent, it was all about him. You know, the serpent right. wanted the best for everything about him, and all, wanted the world to revolve around him. And Cain adopted a lot of that, and God was telling him, "Oh, you know what? You were wrong. You shouldn't have killed him, obviously." But Cain was rationalize it within his mind. I don't think, you know, I mean, you know, Abel started it. Abel wanted my sister, Abel this and Abel that. But when it came down to it, he was guilty. I mean, he did, as we researched here a little bit last time, he did provide the killing blows. So that is going to be another thing for us to see as far as these parallels from then to now, is the way Cain thought and the way he rationalized things out. And the way he looked at the world.
Yeah.
Ready?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So one thought that we were just starting to get into last time is the word cynical. And Cain, one root word that I've researched is cynic or canine. And it's interesting. We do have the dog star, and that's in astrology, of course, but the word cynical is distrustful of human nature, doubting, contemptuous, mocking, scornful, sneering, etc. We have all these thoughts of someone who is cynical, and Cain was apparently probably one of the first people who was actually very cynical and actually was known for his cynicism. So if we think about all these things that actually Cain was going on in his mind, we can start to see what kind of person that he was and why he would actually not be afraid of God. And we found that actually the cynics in Greece were evidently really proud of their title. They adopted a dog as their emblem or badge. And this is a quote that I have, and they believe that Cain derived his existence from a superior power and Abel from the inferior power. So if you think about that, we have Cain actually looking towards his father, the serpent, and thinking, well, you know, I'm on the earth. These ways seem better. It's all about me. What's wrong with that? And obviously, Abel wanting to do the right thing. You think of
yes. that? Yes, absolutely. Which, again, is why I believe that, you know, Abel was according an innocent nature, and that Adam, being his father, he followed along in his footsteps, and that Eve also, and that, you know, the enmity that we would see prophesied in Genesis 3:15, that this prophecy was actually fulfilled with the murder of Abel by his half-brother Cain. And that, you know, he would be the first victim in this ongoing war this enmity between the bloodlines, the seed lines of the world in this day and age. And so, you know, again, it shows and helps one to understand the story in a manner that, you know, otherwise you could not truly make sense of in the way that it should be understood, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And they, and in modern churches and such, they just skim over these stories, but these are the the trendsetters. These are the foundations of what's going on in this world today. I mean, again, you know, they say history repeats itself, and that is why we study these, at least I do, and Zen does, is study these stories so importantly, because that's what they are. They help us, give us a guide to understanding what's going on and why.
Yes.
Some people actually considered Cain around him as the first free thinker, which is, again, it's kind of interesting because when we talk about the fall and the Garden of Eden, the serpent was filling Eve's mind with all sorts of things such as, you know, you will be enlightened. You will have knowledge of good and evil. Don't let God create other worlds and destroy this one. And you know, all these things that he was promising Eve was had to do with an enlightenment, a lot of them, enlightenment and just being a god herself. And if you think about it, even the pagan way of the Garden of Eden, their perception of it all was that, the serpent didn't actually curse Adam and Eve because of his trickery and his deceptions and his words. He actually enlightened them and he freed them. He freed them from an oppressive God and a God who actually is out there just to make them suffer and just, you know, obey all these rules. The serpent provided them a way out. And that's probably how Cain's peers looked at Cain as well, as a free thinker, one who challenged God, one. You know, you've heard about Atlas and holding up the world, and I found that one of the definitions of Atlas, it's actually a title, and I can go into it deeper. We will go into it deeper, but holding the world up is basically what I think another interpretation is basically this particular pagan god was known for holding the world up against God and pushing back. And holding all of what he stood for up and pushing it up against God. So that's one possible way where we get that definition of holding the world up like that. It's interesting, but it's a thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead. What are you saying then? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so now, again, Cain was what had it on the line because he means business now. Cain does because he has no other choice. He's talking to the creator of the universe. So he's going to try every trick in his hand up his sleeve to actually be able to get out of this. So the bad part about all that was going on is as Cain was trying new and new things, his soul and his heart was becoming darker and darker. And of course, you know, with his father being the serpent in this particular instance, he had a lot to choose from. And I believe he had a lot of deviancies to actually challenge God in this way, even though, of course, there's not going to be a challenge at all. But I'm just saying he at least had a lot of aces up his sleeve to be able to at least throw a few things out there. What do you think, son? Agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, the whole theme of the enmity between these two bloodlines and how it plays out, I think it's very critical to understand because it helps us to understand what's going on in the world in this day and age with the, you know, the hokey pokey and all the, even the chemtrails and why the elites would do certain things when it seems to, you know, it affects them and their children as well. And so it would be insane for them to do something that would affect negatively everybody, and including their bloodlines and lineage. But, you know, these elites that are serving in Blood Oath to the forces of Legion, the eye at the top of the Illuminati pyramid, these forces are taking Blood Oath to follow the agenda for world government and for the imposition of such. And in that manner, they're, you know, bringing on the New World Order in the way that I believe it has been laid out by the spiritual wickedness in high places, that there's something more to it than just, you know, the G8 gathering together for discussions on climate change and this and that. But anyways, go ahead.
I've done a little research too, and I pieced together, I believe that all-seeing eye of Horus was actually Horus was Cain himself, and that's just another guess. But it's an educated perception that I have found, because what I believe is that another parallel between the days of Noah and now was this all-seeing eye, which they used to the antediluvian peoples. They used this concept of, we're watching you, Big Brother, even back then, to keep people in line. But they had a lot more of a spiritual aspect to it. They didn't have computers, etc., and this and that. But I believe that they had, of course, they had the giants who had some supernatural abilities, and they had, of course, the Nephilim and fallen angels, and a lot of these did have some supernatural abilities that a lot of people don't have today, and they were able to use to actually keep tabs on people. So I believe that all-seeing eye was all the way back even before the flood, and that's where they just kept that symbol. Even it went through ancient Egypt, and it went even beyond that and to modern days, masonries. And it basically, that's where it was adopted, because now, today, we've seen the same parallel of the all-seeing eye. It's on the back of the dollar bill, excuse me, it's back in the dollar bill. And what a way to keep people under control and the ones that you want and know what everybody's doing, is to have another all-seeing eye that's virtual today, that's everywhere we go. We can't really do anything without being understood or spied upon.
Yes.
Okay. So back, we have, now we're going to look at the curses, because obviously God knew that Cain wasn't going to buy any of what he was saying. He basically doubled down, like a lot of people do today when they're wrong. They don't have really the desire to just admit that they're wrong. They double down. So Cain, again, probably the patriarch of that, was doing exactly that. Now let's get into some of these interesting thoughts about the punishments, because I'm sure Zen and I have talked about it a little bit. There was probably more than just the mark out there that actually was to affect Cain. And I think, Zen, you mentioned it last time, the shaking. And I think that's an interesting one, where at the fall, and this is why I think there was shaking, because that was one of the curses that was put upon Cain, is a continual shaking. He walked around like he was on, right, on something, and nervous, total nervous and total, couldn't sit still. It just an absolute, it was horrible. It was like he was hyperactive to the nth degree. So I think the reason why God punished him for that was because back in the garden, when God talked with Adam, Adam was shaking. He was very afraid of punishment, and he respected God enough to say, you know, he did try to get out of it, of course, at first. You know, he blamed Eve. We remember that. But after a while, when God laid down the law, laid the hammer down, Adam was shaking. And then God saw that and had a little bit of remorse and thought, you know, or had a little bit of sympathy towards Adam and said, okay, well, I'm not going to punish you as hard as I was originally, because you are showing me some respect and you are sweating sweating because you're so scared. Kane didn't have that. So he didn't have any type of outward fear or anything. He wasn't showing it. So God said, okay, if you're not going to actually show me some shaking, I'm going to make you shake. I mean, I believe there's always some kind of ironic reason why God does things. It's fascinating. The more you research it, there's ironic results in so much of what God does and what I believe. It, you know, it's just interesting. So I believe you kind of look for it and you'll find it. And I think that was one of the reasons why he was shaking, is because of that.
Sort of like Parkinson.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I think we also talked a little bit about it, but God was originally going to make him a fugitive and a vagabond. And I believe he took away one of them just because God was nice. But I guess Cain might have showed a little bit, just a very tiny bit of remorse. But so God took away one of those. So now he was only going to be a vagabond about the earth and a wanderer. Okay. And it's interesting that he took away the fugitive part and he kept the vagabond. So the fugitive, the people that were around them at the time, and we talked about them already beyond the Adam and Eve, basically wanted vengeance and they heard what happened. I believe that the mark of Cain, just kind of jumping into it, the mark of Cain is not really anything that's physically on him. The more I researched, and I researched it a number of years, I believe it all kind of ties in to the Bible and ties in what the reason for the mark in the first place. And the reason for the mark in the first place, as we'll go into it a little later, is because God decided not to have him as a fugitive. He said, okay, you're just going to wander. And I think the reason why he wanted Cain to wander the earth just by himself in the land of Nod, or wander even in his head, in his own head, is because he was already starting to be that way. And God probably thought, okay, Cain, if you're just going to start to have all these weird thoughts in your head, I want you to think about all these things that you said and done to me. It's almost like he putting someone into jail and making him just sit there and think about it for the rest of his life. That's how God wanted Cain to end up his whole life, is just to continue to have these thoughts torture him, because that would be probably the best punishment if you really think about it. I believe the mark is actually not necessarily on Cain physically or anything on himself. I believe it's an attitude. It's a perception of people around him, because again, taking away the fugitive punishment means that nobody around you should be out there trying to get vengeance against you and take you out. They got to leave you alone, let you wander around aimlessly in your mind for the rest of your life. So instead of a normal attitude and a normal response, as many people would, to seeing this guy brutally murder his brother, God allowed for this mark, the sign, to be upon Cain, that when people saw him and thought of him, they immediately and they just rationalized it away and said, okay, let him wander, leave him alone. I would love to take vengeance on this Cain for what he did, but now he's marked. He's marked to wander, so I'm going to leave him alone. Uh-huh. What's your thoughts then?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, the whole theme of him being a vagabond and a wanderer and being exiled. And I also think that the punishment of how he and his children, his bloodline, that they're not able to farm, to produce mm-hmm. from the ground, that they right. can't, you know, they can't just settle and farm to where they could sustain themselves to get food and nutrients from, you know, they're being able to settle, which the whole thing of starting a city, if you look at what they did and reading the first and second book of Adam and Eve, you see that the children of Cain, they started the city what Cain started, Enoch, the city of Enoch, so that he could regulate commerce, to set weights and measures, to create money. And he also was the one that had established what became the tavern and the whole bar scene, and even brothels came up as something that the Cainites had set into place. And even that, you know, as far as people creating weapons of war, getting mad and, you know, drunk and taking out their anger and insanity upon others, you know, being drunk and blacking out and hurting others and causing harm because they're under the influence. I mean, these kind of things, in my opinion, you know, again, explain the whole story of how Cain and his bloodline, that they were the ones that set up this way of life and propagated it, and how it was, you know, even the creation of the spirits, as far as, you know, the spirits of alcohol, beer, these kind of things were said to have been set up by the Cainites. And so it's very interesting, you know, when you really begin to look at it and examine it and understand it, as, you know, their bloodline, that they set up this way of life.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I know this concept, this perception of the mark, and this thought is hard to swallow for some. But, you know, I've done a lot of research, and all the other ones that I found, like a horn in his head and leprosy and he's got a dog, and all, there's a lot of thoughts and conclusions about the mark, and they make some sense, but they really, I think that it's something bigger than just maybe a mark on his, even on his forehead. They sometimes said that there was a cross on his forehead or a towel on his arm, or I just think there's a little bit more to it. I think, and Cain was able to use this mark to his advantage over the years, because I think the more wrong he did, when he did build these cities and he did go out and establish the first empire and et cetera, he was able to actually, you can almost twist people's minds and saying, you know, okay, well, it's not my fault. I was burdened this way. And then people might start to have sympathy for you, and you're capitalizing on that mark, you know, just leave me alone. Right. Let me do what I need to do. Right. And they're capitalizing. And I researched one of the ancient sources said something about the reason why actually Cain started building cities is because he was still very paranoid about somebody coming out and taking him out and killing him. So he figured that if he can get some cities to hide in and with walls around it and get his people in here, he'd feel more safe. So we talked about him shaking and being very nervous and wandering in his mind. And anybody who's like that probably is paranoid as well. And then these are one ways that he can actually try to feel a little bit safer, because he probably, assuredly, he didn't trust God that, you know, this mark would protect him. He probably thought, you know, somebody was going to get him. So he probably did all he could to stay safe. And I agree. I think what some of these things that you were talking about, the brothels and all these other things and the beer and the amusement parks, et cetera. I mean, not amusement parks we know today, but just little minstrel type of, or these little type of carnival shows that they probably throw just to seduce people into more of the dark arts and getting to love the material things of this world and otherworldly things, et cetera. They started doing these things. The Cainites did. A couple things that research that I found is basically some more of the curses that he had is that he would be toiled, he groaned, He did not profit in a lot that he did, which is interesting. He may have got an empire and controlled the salt trade or whatever, but he didn't really, probably in his mind, felt that he was doing enough or did enough or was good enough, because we talked about perdition and the son of perdition, which is actually worthlessness in the New Testament, and the serpent being perdition and the son of perdition actually feeling worthless himself. And I believe that that was part of the curse that actually God gave to the serpent, is instead of feeling really, really high and elated about yourself, you're going to constantly feel worthless and you're going to feel low self-esteem, and you need to raise it somehow or continually raise it somehow to make yourself feel better. That's a curse. And that's something that Cain probably felt. Another couple of curses that I found is never satisfied. That goes right along with what we're talking about, disappointment at every desire, lack of sleep. And, of course, wandering in his mind. I'm looking a little bit here. I'm moving on in the book here and looking more about the mark. And, a cross is one of the alternates that we found. Which is interesting. That I'll give you a few of these alternate thoughts that about the mark, so we can kind of ponder on them. But one was that he was branded with the letter T or Taw, possibly placed on Cain's left arm or his forehead. And it says in the from my book it here, it says, as the last letter of the Phoenician or and Hebrew alphabet, this Taw was also considered a cross. So that it's an interesting thought. Maybe the cross was there to show an ancient parallel of what would happen and what would need to be done, that Jesus would need to die on the cross to actually help the seeds of Adam. It's a thought, you know, and it's an interesting thought about what that mark would be. What's your thoughts?
We did the show where we made mention of the mark, and there's a lot of different interpretations as far as the mark of Cain. You made mention of the horn, which it talks about this story in the book of Jasher, and how the horn that was said to be the mark that differentiated Cain from the rest of humanity, that this mark was also something that gave his own ancestors a way to recognize the distinction with him and the other animals, and how even though Tubal-Cain in the story was the grandson of Lamech, the blind, he wasn't able to see in clarity as one would, you know, really hope in recognizing Cain as his, you know, great grandfather or whatever it was, seven generations away. But when Lamech felt what he had slaughtered, he immediately recognized this as Cain, and that he had killed the progenitor of their bloodline. And so that's why he was alarmed and clapping his hands, bringing them together in disgust at what he had done, and also in shock and horror that he killed Tubal-Cain and was left, you know, being blind, was left out there without being able to find his way home. And it wasn't until his wives came later and helped him to, you know, to find his way home, that he was able to escape from that situation. But he did declare that if Cain was going to be, the curse from generation to generation, seven times for what he did to Abel, that it would be 70 and seven times right for what he had done to Cain and also to Tubal-Cain. So
Right. And if we didn't have these alternate sources, these alternate ancient sources, we wouldn't have been able to piece that together, because the Bible only says that Lamech did his song. They call it Song of the Sword, or that cry where he said, you know, I killed one man for my hurting and one man or one other man or one young man. We would just only be able to read that in the Bible, and we would be wondering, what does that mean? What's the significance of that portion? And now we do a research. Now, again, Zen just brought that up about what all that could signify, and that actually was Cain. And yeah, it's interesting. Now, do you believe that that was the reason that Jesus had to be born 70 generations after Enoch, possibly? Because I heard they did some calculating in some sources I read, and they said basically that was part of the reason why the Savior and the Messiah had to come so much later, is because of Lamech killing Cain before his time. He was supposed to die on his own. And the seventh generation, which was Lamech's generation, but since he killed him, since he killed Cain, that curse, that's another curse in the Bible, where God says, you know, you will be cursed to live out seven generations from you. But if somebody kills you, again, here we go back to the killing again, and the need for some kind of mark that stigmatizes him. If somebody killed him before that time, you'd have to add another 70 generations. Do you think that was the reason why Jesus had to come back, the Messiah had to come back after 2,000 years, which is probably another 70 generations? You ever heard that?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Have you ever heard that?
Say that one more time as far as what you...
Okay, God gave Cain the curse and said, yeah, you will live out the rest of your life for seven generations, and if somebody kills you, there will be another 70 times, or 70 plus seven, right? So that's 77 generations. Mm-hmm. So could that be linked into the Messiah being born? And because if you do some counting, I've seen some articles that said that actually from God all the way to Jesus' birth, that's 70 generations of Adam. So I don't know, or 77 actually. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, no, I have not, but it makes sense to me, you know, again, because the Messiah would come in order to redeem both bloodlines. And we are at break.
Okay.
Hold on. We'll be right back, everyone, for second hour.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only
on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect
us.
We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back! You can torture us and bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us!
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
All right, welcome back, everybody, for a second hour. I am your host, Zen Garcia. This is Momentary Zen here on Revolution Radio. And I'm joined this evening by my good friend and author, Brett Thomas. We are discussing Mystery Babylon, a series, and also the website that he maintains, and the book series that he has put out, and which can be found at sacredwordpublishing.com. Before we went to break, we were discussing the curse of the generations and how these 77 and however many more generations, you know, that there was the curse from Lamech from having killed him, and also that Cain would be preserved with this mark for seven generations, that he would, you know, and which is Lamech was the seventh generation from him, and who actually was prophesied to kill him, and having killed him, there would be the curse of 77 generations of humanity, leading to what could have been, you know, I'm not one to be able to calculate, but could be the birth of the Messiah coming into the world, that the children of Cain having been condemned. But either way, the fall of humanity was rectified by and Adam and Eve being restored to their first estate. a return to their bright nature by Yahushua, that the whole purpose of his coming was to redeem us, and that even his name, Yahushua, is Yah's salvation, which is exactly what he was. He was the salvation of, you know, the whole world, humanity as a race, that his death on the cross opened the door for our return to paradise, and that defeating death, extending to all salvation and grace from the promise of the cross. This is the mission that he fulfilled, and that this mission was established even before the foundations of the world, because we see in the story of the legends of the Jews on the creation of the world, it shares how the council of the Father Yahuwah, together with the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, and also Christ, the Word, the Son of God, how they came together and discussed that humanity, once we were born and take on physical incarnation, that we would be a challenge, you know, that we would fall away from what was our perfect innocence and fragile ways, and that we would fall into sin and become evil and inclined to evil in much the way that Cain was. And that we see this even in the first 10 generations, that in the time of Noah, he was the last that was pure in his generations and untainted by Nephilim blood, and that everybody else had gone the way of Cain, right, which is one of your books and the things that you wrote about. And so, yeah, it's a very critical theme to understand, and it helps people to make sense of the bigger picture and why we are here now, what all this is about, and why we're here even now in the flesh and in this incarnation.
Right. Yeah, I agree totally. Like this book, the first one, The Way of Cain, is more of a cultural look or societal look at the way people, their world views, the way they think, the way they look at things, their faith, etc. And the next one gets more into politics and religion and that sense. But that's why we had this first one, is because that is an important thing that we see all around us every day, and it's good to kind of see the modern day parallels of what might have actually originated way back then. Going more back into our story here real quick with Lamech and Cain and the horn, I know this whole concept that I was talking about was hard to swallow as far as the mark, but I do seem to find a few thoughts about these other curses and these other possible marks, like the horn, which are interesting. That could have possibly been a horn, and that could very well have been the reason why Lamech knew that it was Cain that was the one that he actually killed, rather than an animal, is where he went down and felt his horn. Another thought about a horn, though, which is always interesting, and according to the research, is that a horn in the ancient times did symbolize power and authority. And having a horn right in the forehead, like where a lot of people thought that it was placed as a result of the mark, is interesting place, because if we have the third eye, which we've heard about, you know, the supernatural spiritual connection and power, if somebody has a power right in the middle of their forehead, right by where that perception of where the third eye is, it's kind of interesting that maybe God allowed Cain to have some of this supernatural. Maybe he already had it through being the son of the serpent. Maybe he had some of these abilities to thwart any people who might be out after him and might not just actually fall for the mark of Cain and et cetera. So I believe this mark, or at least this horn, could have also been a horn of power, and a horn of power in Cain's mind to help him actually be brighter and be smarter, just like the Nephilim and some of the giants that were out there, to actually build these mice cities that they started, and to actually do all these things that would actually be considered very worldly today. What's your thought on that, Sam?
Yeah, you know, again, the whole thing with Cain and the generations, it leads to the promise, the coming of the Messiah, and that's the important thing for people to understand. You know, that salvation through Christ, that the whole reason, redemption, repentance, everything, it's the fullness of the message of his coming, even with what the Masoret discusses. And I believe, you know, the interpretation of even the Gemini twins has to do with this enmity playing out between these two bloodlines, and how, you know, how the serpent tried to thwart the birth of the Messiah, even instigating Herod to kill all the children 2 years and down, and how he performed that great slaughter, you know, in Bethlehem, having his henchmen and go out and kill all these innocent babes. And you can only imagine the weeping, the brutality of them being stripped away from their parents, and it's
right,
you know,
right.
Cold-blooded murder.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, the redemption, repentance, forgiveness, salvation, eternal life through Christ, that's the message of the gospel.
Right, and that's the whole gist of the story, gist of the Bible.
Yeah.
So going back to this this knowledge that he might have actually had or picked up, that did help him, for what the research shows, is to be much, much more powerful. God wanted him to wander, which he probably, most probably did in his mind, but he wanted to defy God and not just wander in the land of Nod, if that's whatever that is, wherever that was. But that's one reason why I believe he also tried to start making cities and started an empire, because he wanted to defy it. He didn't want to just wander and think about what he did. He wanted to just live the best life that he could and use all the material things around him to help him get there. So I believe, like a lot of the people of Cain, we're starting to actually do the opposite of what God wanted. I think God wanted people to live more simply, live in tents possibly, not really just do anything like that. But of course, Cain wanted to extort what the fallen angels, the knowledge that they had, and some of these ways of building and these ways of possibly even moving big stones around, etc., to help him in his defiance of God.
I'm okay. Sorry, brother.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to share the news with the listening audience. I don't know if this is correct or not, but it seems that my good friend and brother in Christ, Rob Skiba, has passed away and has gone on to be with the Lord. And I just cannot believe this.
Oh my. Oh my. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, Zen.
I'm sorry for Sheila and his family. He was a good friend to me. I just can't believe this.
I'm sorry.
We were going to do a prayer vigil was being set up for this coming Friday. The Baileys had contacted me and they were setting something up that, you know, a lot of friends and people that, you know, have worked with Rob and really knew him and were close to him. But, and I'm not sure if, you know, this is just what was put in the chat room. I don't know.
That's where you heard it.
I don't have any. Okay. Yeah, I'm just reading it in the chat room. I don't know with any certainty. I certainly hope it's not true, but
I know. I know. I met him. He's very nice, very nice man. Oh man.
But I don't. You know, I don't want to say anything without any confirmation, but yeah, we'll try to continue. I apologize. I just
no. There's no apology needed. I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say either. Sorry.
Adam, it says in the chat that Adam Fink, who's with the Parable of the Vineyard, just told Jessica Arellanes, who has her show Crossover. But, you know, again, I don't know with any certainty. I'll find out after the show and let people know if this is the truth. But I know that he, you know, had been struggling since he returned from the conference. It's hard for me to imagine.
Really? He looked fine at the conference.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the conference, the Take on the World.
Oh.
He went there in August and gave three different speeches. And then when he returned, he was sick. And the last time I spoke with him, he was in the ICU and struggling and was on a ventilator. But anyways, let's continue, brother. I don't want you to, you know, I know this is, not the topic of the show, but.
Well, it's a very important topic. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. It's hard to continue with this happening. Okay. What I'll continue with Cain and the world according to Cain and his thoughts, because we know there's two sides to every story. And Cain seemed to have his own side. And it's always interesting when we look at pagan mythology and a lot of the different beliefs out there that are contrary to God, how a lot of them actually say or utter the same story practically as in the Bible, or they even use a lot of the same characters. They might change around a few names, but a lot of the same story elements seem to happen, especially these early times of Genesis. But it's from an opposite point of view, which is interesting. It's always when you read it, that's what helps your discernment, is when you read it and when you see a certain story or a certain ancient text or something like that. And if something starts to lead you to an opposite thought that you know is not godly, that's where your discernment can kick in. And that's where the still small voices can help you diagnose and find out if this story, if this particular text is right or what is trying to push on you. So that's interesting because, again, we're starting to get the two seed lines and the two theologies of these seed lines and what they're actually pushing. And if we find out at the end, it's usually one is the opposite of the other. And that's one way to actually diagnose what is going on. So the more we learn about Cain, the more we see that is actually correct. And what he is starting to push is not push. In other words, we're not pushing something above. They are pushing something below. They're pushing something worldly. Something around this world can help you get your salvation. Living a certain life here without God, you possibly can reincarnate after your death, get something higher the next life, etc. You don't need God. You can utilize the spirits and the thoughts that are around this world to help you. That's basically the development and what the pagan religion would actually come to be. Because paganism, in a classical sense, is all that is the religious beliefs that's opposed to God and to what he wants for mankind. So when we hear about giants too, it's sometimes it's interesting because we know that there were giants in the earth at those days, and they were from the Nephilim and human women for the most part. But sometimes we even have giants being Noah. Sometimes in some ancient sources was called a giant, and we do have even Cain was called a giant. And I believe when we talk about giants, sometimes, especially in patriarchs, it doesn't mean that they are actually like 8 feet tall or 9 feet tall. But it's more of they had a giant amount. They were considered like superstars of their time, and that's why sometimes some sources will actually call Cain or Adam, and or even Noah, giants of their time. You've heard that, Jen?
Yeah. I do still believe that, you know, as far as the early generations of humanity, that they were, you know, larger stature and of bigger size, and that they had longer lifespans. But certainly, I do believe that Cain was different. You know, that he was seraphic, and that he, in whatever, you know, in some way that he was reptilian in nature, and so that made him different than the other, you know, even the children of Adam, that the children of Cain were in some manner reptilian in aspect and had character.
Right. I absolutely believe you too on what you said about there were actual giants. I mean, we're not just talking about figuratively here, that when the Watchers came down, they were up to what, 12 feet, maybe even taller, 14 feet possibly. And the Anakim were up to the 8 to 9 feet. So there were actually pure giants that were a result of these infusions. So I agree too on that. It wasn't just figuratively. They were actually out there. Yeah. Now,
hey, hold on just a second here, yes. Brett. If you don't mind, there's a friend in the chat room, James Brown. He suggested that we take a moment of pause here to reflect on the gravity of the situation and what
absolutely,
you know, happened with Rob, and I think it would be appropriate for me to share a prayer. I'm sorry. But
sorry, son.
Yeah, let me just
take your time.
Let me just say this prayer for our good brother Robski, man. Because I know that, you know, so many people out there have been so deeply touched by his work and by his life, and I'm certainly one of those individuals. I'm honored to have shared time and space you know, doing the work in the ministry with him. He was a very kind brother, and one that was open to truth. And, you know, whereas so many people wouldn't even talk to me, much less associate with me in doing shows. And he opened, even at the risk of his reputation, to do shows and to share truth in the way that we were able to for all that time. I'm really so very glad that we were able to do that work and to go through the scriptures in the manner that we did. I really hope that people appreciated him and what he brought to the world. But I want to pray for you, Brother Rob. You were a very kind and compassionate and gentle soul, and we thank you for all that you did to really help people to come to truth and to open themselves to new possibilities, because there was so much that you taught that others wouldn't even begin to align themselves with. I remember that both of us came to, you know, as far as biblical cosmology, the discernment of it together, and being able to share that journey and that voyage, and how you would stand for truth no matter against whatever odds, no matter who ridiculed you, who turned their backs on you, who, you know, shunned you and pushed you away, that you went through a lot of suffering and strife in the same manner that all of us do in coming to truth. I just pray for you, brother. I know you're in a good place in that. That the angels are celebrating having you there. And that God is happy with your work. It's just sad for all of us who remain behind. I know also that even during the days of Noah, that those that were righteous, they were taken out before the time of the end, before the gate, the door was shut on the ark, and the world was drowned, that the righteous were taken on to be with the Lord. And I just pray that all of us at some point will join you in reunion, and we'll all be able to celebrate together and look back at this journey and look back at this life and this walk and this trial, and to celebrate overcoming. I pray that all of us are worthy, and I also pray that your life and your memory, that people will find it in their heart to really prioritize the work, to really do what they need to while they're here, that we're not promised any more tomorrows. We're not promised another day. You know, you never know what's going to happen and when the Lord is going to call us home. So get busy. Get busy, people. Do something that will leave a lasting memorial, that when people go to reflect on your life's work and that they think of you, in memory that they will hold you in fondness in the manner that the world will hold and celebrate the life of our good brother, Rob Skibook. We love you, brother. We look forward to that time when we're all gathered together.
And yeah.
All honor, all praise, all thanksgiving to the Most High, because for whatever reason he called him home. Again, I apologize to you, Brett.
There's no apology yet.
I know, brother.
Maybe we should talk about maybe him the rest of the time. I think that's appropriate. For sure.
I think also, you know, the people that are in the chat room, they know how important Rob was to me and to a lot of people, because, you know, so many people just even discovered my work and were able to open themselves to the stuff that I do because of his relationship with me. I mean, you know, he had a very large ministry. 200,000 subscribers. A lot of people really loved Rob and trusted him and looked to him for guidance and direction. And, you know, he endured a lot of ridicule for even being friends with me, even doing shows with me. That so many people threatened to unsubscribe to him or threatened to, you know, cut him off from giving him and sending him money and, you know, and supporting his ministry, which even before tonight, I was already thinking I wanted to do this, and so I guess it's a good time to kind of announce this, but I was thinking that I wanted to open myself to maybe twice a week doing individual consultation to whoever out there. If you are struggling, you know, just like being like a life coach. And I wanted to do this not for myself and not even for you, but I wanted to open this service to people, and I wanted to ask them to donate to Rob and his family and to Sheila, because I was concerned for her. And so already I had the thought of doing this. And so in a couple of weeks, I'm going to, if anybody would be interested in doing that, I would set aside a time twice a week, just 30 minutes. And you can ask me, talk to me about whatever, if you are needing advice on cryptocurrencies, or if you just want to ask me about scriptural whatever, you know, then I would just ask you to please donate to her. Yeah, you don't even have to tell me anything, whatever about you feel, you know, just so that we can help her in some way.
Yeah. That's a good thought. Very good.
So if anybody is interested in doing that, I would just ask that you contact my children at sacredwordpublishing.com through the contact us in the title line. Just put consultation and we'll go ahead and start scheduling, and I'm going to do this at least twice a week. As long as there's a need and a demand, and as long as people are willing and wanting, that I'll do this as a giveaway to help. And I know that many of you would also, like to help, and that you would want to share your love with her and her family. And I know that this has got to be a great, great shock to her. I can't imagine the kind of pain that her and her family are going through right now. Because this is a full-on surprise for all of us.
Yeah. When did you meet Robson? When did you first meet him?
I first met Rob at the Flat Earth Conference in what was it? The first one? I think it was Colorado, and then in Dallas. Because a lot of people ask me why I don't do a lot of the other conferences, but I've been pretty much banned from most conferences, but I was invited to the Flat Earth conferences, not the first one in North Carolina, but the second one in Colorado, and the third one in Dallas. I spoke at and presented at both of those conferences, and of course Rob was a mainline speaker for both of them, which he usually is. People really respect his work and his presentations, and he always had a witty sense of humor in bringing forth his speeches and presentations. He had a most excellent way of doing his PowerPoints, and had a sense of humor that always kept the people engaged with what he was talking about. And at one of those conferences, he also did a debate with Dr. Robert Sengenis, who, doesn't, even though he did the movie The Principle, on the geocentricity of the Earth, he still doesn't believe that the Earth is a flat plane, when it's obvious that there's no curvature, and anybody can go and confirm that for themselves. But yeah, that was the first time that I met Rob, and then also he was a speaker at our conference, and you know that, Brett, because you were there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As well.
Yes, he did. He did excellent.
Yeah.
He was one of the highlights of the conference, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many years ago was that when you met him?
Let's see. The first Flat Earth Conference was in 2016, yeah, because it was after the publication of Flat Earth as Key to Decrypt the Book of Enoch, which I think, I began writing that in 2015, because that was also the year of my awakening to biblical cosmology, as it was Rob's as well. And he was he was a speaker at the first one as well, and even did an interview with ABC News on the you know, the Flat Earth Conference. Wow. I remember him doing that.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, he's always has been very well spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a very, very refined way of speaking and presenting. It kept the audience's participation and attention very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Rob and I also did initially, because he wasn't open, you know, I don't say wasn't open to some of my teachings. He just hadn't studied it and didn't embrace some of the things that I was teaching, which you know, Brett, you teach Serpentine as well. It's a very controversial topic, and it's one that has gotten us in hot water with regard to the alternative truth movement. I know that you're just now starting to do a lot of the outreach and a lot of the radio shows and broadcasting, but I had used to come on a lot of people's shows until the publication of Lucifer, Father of Cain, and then for whatever reason, I became a black sheep of, you know, the alternative truth movement. And,
not in my eyes.
Yeah, well, you and Dr. Joy and a couple of others, you know, have been on board with this teaching for a very long time and have been standing by it, but I remember when Rob was first interested in hearing about this topic, he invited me to come on to a show and debate Dante Fortson, which he wrote a book called Serpent Seed Debunked or
Debunked.
Something about
Yeah, anything. I've seen yeah. that one.
Yeah, and so, you know, I ask people to read both. If you really want to know, go ahead and read both, even though I really don't even consider his book worth reading. But, you know, if people want to know the truth, I guess they should always study
both sides of it. Yeah,
absolutely. But, and so I did a presentation on his show, and then we did a debate. And, you know, afterwards, he opened himself to examination of the topic, and he, after several weeks, finally accepted and admitted that he was a believer. And that was very shocking because, you know, a lot of people are so adamant on not accepting truth because of the repercussions of aligning yourself with Serpent Seed as, you know, revelation, that anybody that does that is usually ostracized in huge manner and then attacked, you know, your reputation attacked. And like I said, you know, you have people that because they don't agree with your stance, they'll threaten to cut you off from funding or support. And it's so odd that people are like that, but it is like yeah. that.
I mean, if we have freedoms, I mean, what's wrong with researching whatever we can and coming up with our own conclusions? I mean, I don't, why do people have to jump on that so much? I mean, it's just researching. Right? It's just kind of trying to find the truth that seems to make sense to you.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then, you know, again, I think that anybody that studies this topic and other topics, you know, again, I think it was Rob and I that were the first in the Christian alternative movement to start to teach about and to talk about our study, our open-hearted, open-minded examination of biblical cosmology. Mm-hmm. You know, and how he called himself for the longest time a Zictetic agnostic, meaning that he didn't want to go all the way to, you know, stating that he was a flat earther. But once he went to Michigan and did the where he took the boat trip out to the Chicago skyline and filmed it from the shores of Lake Michigan in the same way that Joshua Nowicki had taken that, you know, now world famous photo of the Chicago skyline from 60 miles distance, and how you're not even supposed to be able to see the skyline of Chicago because it should be behind, you know, 1 mile of curvature, so that you could even see the tops of the what are the highest buildings in that skyline, and yet you can see the entirety of the building and Chicago from the bottom of the city to all the way up. That should not be possible. And yet it is. And so he openly declared in his return from that journey that he's going to stand on this truth no matter what. And it cost him in the same way that it cost me, you know, when I first started really standing on this truth and teaching about it and sharing my coming to discernment on it and my journey to awakening on it. There were so many people that said, oh, you're blowing your credibility, you know, this is absolute craziness, you're just gonna, nobody's gonna believe you on anything else that you've ever said and any other truth that you've ever brought forth. It's all just, you know, lunacy. You're just a conspiracy theorist, blah blah blah, this that, you know. And go ahead, Brent.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. One thing I thought is, I mean, we're not sitting here and inventing these thoughts. I mean, these people, a lot of these people wrote these things long ago. We're just putting the pieces together and just kind of making a conclusion. It's not what we're making this up and we're telling, you know, these ancient authors what to say. I mean, we're just kind of reiterating what we found, right? It's not meant to be negative against anybody. Or it's just the way what we found according to the research.
Right, right. Also, you know, I'd like to ask people to, those of you, especially that have the technical savvy, to go ahead and download all of Brother Rob's shows and back them up and start uploading them, you know, to your site and share. Share some of his teachings so that, you know, his memory will be long lasting and that it will be found, his voice and his teaching and his work will be found everywhere.
Zen, when did you have your shows with him? So when did you, in the past, I know you were speaking with him quite a bit, right?
We did a show once a week together.
Okay.
It's going back several years now, I think. You know, we first did the Book of Enoch, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And then we went through Genesis all the way up to, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and the 12 tribes.
Wow.
Yeah. There was still so much yet to go, but I'm so grateful that we at least made it through that portion and brought forth so much in teaching. And I think that that series, especially now, that it should be one that should be shared with a lot of people, that it could really change and help people to understand the scriptures in a manner that they had never considered previously.
And the more he looked at the Genesis, the early Genesis, the more he was on board with the whole seed of the serpent thought.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Concept. Especially when I, you know, shared the Targum and shared the information there. I just want to reiterate so much of the things that the people are saying in the chat room about how much, you know, they really appreciate Rob and how they miss him. And let me just share some of the in the last few minutes. I'm asking, people say, yes, preserve the videos before they take them all down. That's a great idea. Kay says he's at Heaven's Gate waiting for all of us. There's so many people just really, let's see. Steve says, Rob opened my eyes to a whole lot of things. Speaking about the Genesis series, Marie Brazier says that Rob made such a huge difference in this world. Gary Lively says that Rob was one of the first people to wake me up to the truth through the exposure of the lies of this world. Rob Skiba will be missed by many. And the Enoch series. Melinda Washington says, you're still listening to the Quest for Truth Genesis Enoch study series that Rob and I were doing. It's going to be hard to listen, but she's going to be marching forward.
I think it would be good for the memory to keep re-looking at those and re-listening to those series.
Yes, absolutely. Lucky Girl says she's so sorry. So sorry for, you know, for me and family, but, you know, she didn't know he passed. But I'm so sorry for Sheila and for his son and the rest of the family. The two beauties, I didn't expect that he would be taken by Yah so soon. Rob was the first to wake me up with his Nephilim vids. This is Shazani. T. Joe says, will not be long before we all see him again.
That's a huge loss.
I again appreciate everybody in the chat room, and I want to thank you again for sharing the news with me. Blues Girl says it's a huge loss to the body. Sean, over 10 years ago, Rob Skiba and Zen opened my mind and changed my life. I never looked back. I will miss the virtual house church. John, I can't even keep up. There's so much commentary in the chat room. We only have just a couple minutes again. And yeah, Rob had a stepson. And so I just want to again thank everybody for joining us in the chat. I apologize for the, you know, just.
You don't have to apologize for anything, Zen. It's
absolutely
nothing. just looking at the all these wonderful comments, and he seemed to me, I didn't know him personally besides meeting him that time, but he seemed like someone who was very, very well respected and very, very well loved. Obviously, I can see just everything here. It's just unbelievable.
Yes. Yes, and again, I want to just tell people that after this week, I'll write something up, and I want to do that consultation if anybody is interested. And I would just ask that it would be on a donation basis, and I'm gonna get a PayPal address so that you can donate directly to Rob and his family. I would ask that people do that anyways, but that I want to do something to where I feel like I'm trying to help in some manner. And I think that this was something that I had already thought about yesterday evening. And I had already reached out to Sheila to see if I could get a PayPal address to do this. But certainly after this evening, I would like to facilitate. And so I'll put something out again. And we appreciate all of you. Brett, I appreciate you, brother. And I love you, man. And thank you for doing these shows with me as well.
You do so much already. I mean, everybody knows it. So, I mean, please don't be too heavy on yourself, because everybody loves you. So, and I'm looks obviously everybody loves Rob too. So, no problem. Yeah. We love you too, man. I love you too. So just, I don't know what more to say except, I'm just so, so sorry.
All right. I appreciate you, brother. And thank you, everyone, again for tuning in.
Thank you, everyone.
God bless all of you.
God bless you.
Good night, all. Hello.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives?